Good afternoon. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the 11th day of April 2010. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, reviewing the news today, before we come on the air here, Sheriff Arvin West down in, I'm not sure how to say this, Hudspeth County, Texas. He was at a town hall meeting the other day, and he suggested that the citizens of his county arm themselves because law enforcement is no longer able to protect the citizens. And he's talking, of course, about the crossover violence from the country of Mexico very nearby. That's a bad state of the situation there for a sheriff to have to be making that announcement. Of course, any sheriff has... duty is to protect the people of his county. That's his statutory obligation, and the oath he takes is to protect the citizens of his county. And of all things, to know the citizens of his county. That's one of the other obligations of every sheriff, although it's difficult with these large population areas, but that is one of their obligations as well. Sad state of affairs, I must admit. I also ran across an article saying that Arizona has now joined five other states, Arizona being state number six, that is getting in the face of the federal government of the United States, telling them that if a firearm is manufactured in our state, there is no federal regulation. We got a break coming up. We got a special guest today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. Before we go to our special guest, get a couple of business-related things out of the way here. Republic Broadcasting is having a pledge drive. And if you feel moved to make a donation, it will be very much appreciated. And you can make your donation pretty painless. You can call the following toll-free number from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. That's 800-724-2719. I say again, 800-724-2719. And just a quick reminder, you can still get the generic business cards, something you can hand out at gathering, any gathering of people. It could be a flea market, a gun show, at church, 100 business cards. For $10, this includes some bumper stickers and a copy of Aaron Russo's DVD. The last DVD he made, by the way, prior to his untimely passing, Freedom to Fascism. And all that for $10. So that's a really good deal at the same toll-free number. That's 800. Get scroll back up. 800-724-2719. Well, in case you've been living in a cave and not watching the news, we're having unprecedented, and I believe, and our special guest will give us some clarification here, and that's one of the first questions I want to ask her. We're having, I believe, and based on my limited knowledge and experience, unprecedented numbers of great earthquakes. Earthquakes large enough that they get posted in red on the United States Geological Survey listing, which earthquakes are pretty common. There's dozens and dozens of earthquakes every day of the year. That's the norm. That's expected. What's different is the number of great earthquakes. And our special guest today is Miss Ann Morrison. Ann is a engineer. I believe she has two different engineering expertise that she has to her credit. And she's a researcher, and Ann has a magnificent brain that is an excellent research tool, just like my brain is a research tool. You know, when she gets a project on her mind, she just goes after it with great diligence and attention to detail. So without further ado, Ann, are you there, my dear?
Yes, I am, John.
Okay. I try to do a little bit different introduction than I normally do for you.
Yeah, I sound like a bulldog.
Well,
When it comes to a research project that you're interested in, I'd say yes, you are. Just like I am when I get assigned a murder case, get out of the way, because I'm on a mission.
Well, I've been very fortunate. I've had a good education, and I've been taught the scientific method, and learned. Then I took my engineering degree, and I learned how to solve problems, and you know, we got lots of problems now.
Well, we do, and you and I, we've been, you know, we became friends and worked together going back to, what, about 1999 or so, something like that?
Something like that.
I've lost track of the years, but somewhere along the way, this whole Earth changes and related topics came to my attention and came to your attention. I'm not sure if we both stumbled upon it at the same time or in close proximity, but my paper I wrote in 2005, No Need for Panic, I talk about future increases in both seismic activity and volcanism, and I'm no seismic expert or volcano expert, either one, but I have read Velikovsky's work, and the last time we went through this was 3,600 years ago, and those cultures, and you know, they left written records and calendars that we can look at and analyze as to what to expect this time around. That's what I base my prognostication on. And I know you spend some time, pretty much 7 days a week, looking at these Earth changes. You sent me a note this morning about, was it Australia, Northwest Australia?
Yes, they had a, it's originally reported as 7.2, and then the USGS downgraded it to 6.8.
Before you go any further, I've heard this a lot the last couple of years, this initial reporting and then the downgrading. Can you give us some insight as to how and why that happens? An initial report of a higher magnitude and then a downgrading within 24 hours to a lower number. How does that happen and why?
Well, it's two different institutions. Tsunami Center is separate from NOAA.
Okay.
From the USGS, and they do the initial reporting because they're interested in the tsunami, whether
right.
there will be a tsunami generated. Also, the EMS over in Europe and France also generates usually a higher number than USGS does, and they'll report it. They were the ones that reported it as 7.2. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center reported as 7.1, and then USGS reported it as a 7, and then they went down to a 6.8.
Okay, now, you mentioned three different agencies, two of which I believe are U.S. government, and one is European. Is that accurate?
Yes. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center is, I believe
they have, different chain of command, and they are really separate agencies. But here's my next question. These three different agencies, these three different reporting agencies, are they using the same type of equipment and looking at coming to a different conclusion, looking at the same results from the same equipment, or is there something else going on?
Well, for instance, the USGS has a disclaimer that says that a machine generates the first number.
Okay.
So the waveform goes through some kind of computer analysis, and it'll spit out a number. And then a seasoned seismologist will look at it, and will look at the P wave and the S wave and the time to travel and the conditions there on the ground,
uh-huh.
you know, the geological conditions.
Okay.
And then they will make the final decision as to what the magnitude should be.
Okay, now, based on your knowledge and experience, is what we're getting from the United States Geological Survey, is it scientifically accurate, or is there a political agenda to reach a lower number by design?
Well, it certainly could be. As the numbers go up, the money involved in initiating emergency response goes up.
Okay.
And so it's possible there's some politics in there. I like to think that our senior seismologists are doing the best they can under the circumstances in which they find themselves.
Well, and they could be doing that and still skewing the numbers, couldn't they? Doing the best they can.
They could.
They find themselves.
Yeah, they could. This one was off of Northwest Australia, so I don't know what would. Well, I suppose there would be an impact on the Pacific Plate, on the Pacific Fleet. And so if they were thinking along those lines, they might downplay it.
Well, actually,
a little bit. It,
correct me if I'm wrong, but ships at sea really aren't affected by these things. They have to be on port near, you know, before a tsunami would even be felt. Is that accurate?
Well, let's say that they were harbored at Diego Garcia. They
right.
might set to
right.
sea.
Right.
And that costs a lot of money. Let's say they're at Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
That costs a lot of money to get them out of the port of Hawaii.
Yeah, they'd have to, because they have a limited time. These things can move as fast as the speed of sound, can't they?
Speed of sound.
Right.
Yeah, it's going through...
735 miles per hour?
Takes about, I'd say 24 hours for it to cross the Pacific before it'll hit the United States on the underwater.
Okay. Well, I know you heard my introduction here, and I was talking about the number of great earthquakes, the ones posted in red on the USGS website. Go ahead.
Yeah, the 7.2 that occurred, unfortunately, was outside the boundary, the political boundary of the United States.
Okay.
Because then the USGS suddenly loses interest, even though it can affect property mm-hmm. within the United States.
Right.
But they finally caught up with everybody else, and they said that this was the largest event to strike this area. And this is a... they won't call it part of the San Andreas Fault,
uh-huh.
but it is an extension. And they say it runs... The way they put it is that it runs parallel to...
Oh, now the one... You're talking about the one in Mexico a few days ago.
A few days ago.
Right.
It was on the 4th of April... And they said that it was the largest one to strike that area since 1892.
A fault that runs parallel to the San Andreas Fault? Is this some kind of joke, or are they serious? Come
serious.
On.
I mean, this is it crosses the border, so of course it can't be the San Andreas Fault. Let me quote you exactly what they say. The faults are distinct from, but... parallel to strands of the San Andreas Fault system.
Well, I got a 3-year-old grandchildren, twins, that they might convince that that's not some kind of fictitious statement, but I don't believe it.
Well, if you look at it, when the ruptures cross mm-hmm. the political boundary,
mm-hmm.
there is a ridge that is built up. And then that ridge goes down under the, in other words, there's hills.
Right.
Instead of a valley, instead of, you know, this runs through the Salton Sea and then up
right.
around India
right.
and all that.
Right.
And it
they
does
just give
it, run...
They just give the same fault a different name. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I'm with you. We had a break. Ann, hold on. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is John Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. Before the break, and we were getting into something I think listeners are going to find fascinating. But before we get back into that, I want you to give your contact information, your website out, please.
Oh, certainly, John. The website is www.homeland-defense4u.com.
All right. World Wide Web, homeland-defense4u.com.
Yes.
Okay, now, this is fascinating to me, and we got a caller and hold. Caller, we're going to get to you here momentarily.
Like to explain something.
Go ahead.
Because people are really confused by the San Andreas Fault.
Right.
The San Andreas Fault is a tectonic plate boundary.
Mm-hmm.
It is the boundary line between the North American tectonic plate
right.
and the Pacific tectonic plate.
Right, right. And so it's on dry ground as opposed to in the ocean. So.
So that means that everything that's to the west of the San Andreas Fault
mm-hmm.
is actually on the Pacific tectonic plate.
Right.
There's only one boundary between those two tectonic plates.
Exactly.
And they're slipping by each other. They're not subducting at that point. They're
mm-hmm.
slipping.
Mm-hmm. Side to
and
side as opposed to up and down.
The Pacific plate is slipping to the northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And the North American plate is slipping to the southeast, northwest. I'm sorry.
No.
Pacific plate is going northwest.
Okay.
U.S. is going southeast.
Okay, now, when you get to that artificial line in the sand, literally in the sand, because it's the desert, where the U.S. border and Mexican border is,
yes.
What do they call it south of the border, the San Andreas Fault?
Oh, they call it, they call it a series of strike zones.
Okay.
And if you
just to clarify here, we're talking about the same thing. It's a continuation of the San Andreas Fault.
Yeah, now listen to this. The transition from the ridge transform boundary
mm-hmm.
in the Gulf of California, now that's on the Mexican side,
right.
to the continental transform boundary in the Salt Sea Trough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you tell me the difference between a ridge transform boundary and a continental transform boundary?
I think it's something to do with political correctness.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're smarter than a fifth grader.
Okay, well, I appreciate that.
Faulting is complex.
This is amazing. Let's take a phone call here, and we've got, I think it's Dennis in Illinois. Go ahead, Dennis. Go ahead, Dennis. You're on the air. Dennis, speak up. It's your turn.
Yes.
Go ahead.
In a democracy, innocent people are persecuted. In a republic, no victim, no crime, no punishment. Common law has just got its common sense, and it has its roots in the Ten Commandments. Out of the original common law was created Admiralty State Emergency High Sea Laws, colorable laws, which are retreated because we've been in an emergency state since the 1930s.
This yes, sir. Do you have a question for Ann? Yes, sir. I understand and agree with what you're saying. Do you have a question for Ann?
Yeah. Well, in a democracy...
Yes, sir. I understand what a democracy is. Do you have a question for Ann Morrison?
It's a one-vote system. A republic is a three-vote system.
Yes, sir. Well, we thank you very much for your call. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Anyway, Ann, the gentleman was making some good points, but it's not even close to what we're talking about, and he wouldn't answer my question, so... we just move on here. Are you and I...
This after
go ahead, Ann.
Zone extended, from where the Sea of Cortez is at the tip there of Baja California into north of the Mexico-USA border.
Mm-hmm.
So the... And in one case, the... along the highway, the highway was offset by 10 feet.
And that's from what happened just the other day?
Yes.
Offset, you mean left to right as opposed to up and down?
Well, no. Let me again quote from, this is from USGS.
Mm-hmm.
Highway 2 was offset at this location by a total of about 1.2 meters. So 1 meter is...
five feet. Yeah.
Across the zone of fractures that offset the road toward the right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean? I mean, are they facing north or south? And with the east side also dropping downwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it did both. So the east side dropped, and I guess the west side just slid to the right.
Now,
so it opened a fracture.
I understand.
Okay.
I want to make a statement here, and I want some feedback from you as to the statement I'm making. These geologists, American geologists, Mexican geologists, they all know each other. They go to conferences. They belong to the same professional associations. And we got a break. It is commercial radio. Everybody, stay tuned and call numbers 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
John Moore is as close as your telephone. Call him right now. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. We got a caller on hold. We'll get to the call here in just a few minutes. But Ann, off the air, we were talking about the direction that our conversation today on April 11th, 2010 needs to go in, and you and I have reached a consensus about where it needs to go, and you want to jump right in here with the April 27th earthquake in Chile, 8.8. Go ahead, Ann.
Yeah, that was February 27th.
February 27th. Excuse me. It's April. Yeah, yeah, it couldn't be. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
February 27th. Go ahead.
Yeah, the I feel that we're not getting a connect the dots from our leaders, especially our scientists in the geology.
By design.
But, well, yes.
Okay, you hesitated a moment. I'm not going to hesitate. I'm going to say flat out, it's by design, but go ahead.
The reason I say that is because as a result of that 8.8 that occurred in Chile, the Earth's center of mass moved. Now, you know there's a bulge in the Pacific south of the equator. The Earth is not a sphere.
Well, and that's due to?
We think that there was an asteroid that struck there.
Okay.
And obliterated the dinosaurs, probably, or whatever was before the dinosaurs. It's been there a long time, but as a result of that, the spin axes does not go through the center of mass.
Right.
And so it wobbles.
Okay.
And it's like a...
Is that what they call the Chandler wobble?
That's the Chandler wobble.
Okay.
And it's like an ice skater, and if, you know, as an ice skater brings his arms into himself, then he spins faster. But he spins vertically from his toes to his head.
Right.
If in one hand he's holding a 40-pound weight,
right,
he will wobble as he spins. Right. He'll still...
Really, the skater would only have to extend one arm instead of two to cause that wobble.
Exactly.
Yep.
So the Earth wobbles, and it's been wobbling for a long time, and there's been people since 1962 that have been appointed, and they're mostly located over in Europe, but I think that we contribute some of that scientific knowledge, too. And they measure that.
Right.
And they keep track of it. And after the Great Sumatran earthquake in 2004, the wobble stopped.
Really?
And it stopped for a period of about 6 months.
No kidding.
It stopped almost a year later, but stopped Christmas 2005. And we were hoping, at least I was hoping, that that would stay that way.
Right.
Because
right.
that wobble introduces time errors.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, when ships run aground,
right,
that's sometimes because the shipping industry sends out corrections, navigational charts, having to do with time so that the ships can figure out what longitude they're on.
Right.
It's still measured by time. And when the wobble is one way, the time is positive, they adjust in a positive way, and if it's the other way, it's adjusted in a negative way.
Right.
And ships that either don't do that or they have a new crew and they aren't aware of that they need to do it, I mean... But these are even American ships sometimes will run up on sandbars or islands or reefs. Remember the China ship, the oil ship?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I don't know if that wasn't deliberate, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, the reef has been there a long time.
Well, the reef's been there a long time, and it should have been on their charts, and I should have known where they were. But if they got the wrong time sequence on their equipment, then that would account for them running aground.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So... And it is published on the web, and I copy it down, and I do an analysis, and that analysis is on my website if people are interested in doing in either doing their own analysis or looking at what I've done. And I've been watching this wobble, and it looks like, of course, it's too early to tell because it takes months for you to find a difference unless there's something drastic.
All right. So the Chandler wobble is back. Is it consistent with what it had been previously?
Well, it was up until after the...
the Chile earthquake?
Right.
Okay.
And now it looks like actually the spin axis may be shifting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm talking thousandths of an inch.
Right.
Maybe half an inch altogether.
Well, it may not sound like much, but when you talk about something that's 24,000 miles in diameter, in circumference, that's a lot. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing that I've noted, and which you'll see on my website, is that I've been tracking the, when the Great Sumatran earthquake struck in 2004,
mm-hmm.
the earth collapsed a little bit. It got a little smaller.
Right.
And
I remember that.
So it got a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
A little faster.
Mm-hmm. And that changes all the time, the sequences, doesn't it?
Well, no. Generally, it's pretty constant. But
oh, really?
In that case, it got a little faster. And that's reflected. One thing these scientists do is they measure the length of the day.
Right.
And so I grasp that.
Wouldn't the day be shorter if the planet was smaller?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
And so the slope of the curve started going down towards zero, which would be that, how they add a leap year or every 4 years?
A day every 4 years, correct.
Yeah. Well, they also add leap seconds
mm-hmm.
to account for the spin of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. They don't tell us about that.
Well, because the drag of the moon on the Earth is slowing the Earth down.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they add it in December when they add the leap year. Sometimes they add it in July. And they were planning on adding a leap second in July
mm-hmm.
this year. And they've decided not to because the Earth is not slowed down.
Okay.
It's now either keeping pace or speeding up.
All right.
When Chile hit, when the 8.8 hit in Chile, mm-hmm. it also collapsed the Earth a little bit. And the Earth sped up again.
Let's take a call here, Ann. Phil's been on hold here. He's a regular
okay.
caller.
Okay.
Phil from Texas, go ahead.
Hi. John, I heard your name on one of the other shows, and I hope this is on subject, but what they said that you were given information about possible flooding or earth changes that were going to take place?
I talk right? about that frequently, yeah. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to know is... you're aware, obviously you're aware about climate gate and all that, and
mm-hmm.
global warming. So what's the real truth there? Is it global warming, or is there something totally different that's going to cause flooding?
It's close enough to be on topic that we'll give it a 60 seconds. I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. Global warming is put out by NASA and Al Gore. Is a cover story to conceal what's really going on. And my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, blows the lid off the cover story, which began basically in 1979. They knew what would be happening 31 years in the future, which is climate change. And they decided on a cover story to obfuscate and confuse and distract people from the real story, which is soon to be dramatic, violent climate change, rising ocean levels, increased volcanism, increased seismic activity, which we're experiencing right now.
Can I ask you two more things real quick?
Real quick.
Okay. And also, I heard another guest call in, and I looked it up on the Internet, but it didn't specify what, that NASA gave a contract to some company by the name of Prudential to relocate. I guess some of their employees,
right.
But it didn't say where they were relocating and what the relocating.
Yeah,
was
let me give you that's one of my research associates, Sheldon Day in Arizona. Sheldon's probably listening. He submitted a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, to get the contract details. It's a Prudential subsidiary, a $74 million contract to relocate NASA employees. There was a two paragraph a press release saying that they were going to do this, and released in 2007, a two-year contract ending in September 2009. And you're right. We don't know the details yet of how many people are where they're being moved from or where they're being moved to, keeping in mind that many NASA employees are very near the ocean at the Kennedy Space Center, at Huntsville, Alabama, and Houston, Texas. And our belief is that they'll be moved to high ground, possibly New Mexico, maybe some other places. So we'll find out.
Okay.
All right.
And is it true the Vatican has an observatory in Arizona?
The Vatican has three professional-grade observatories. And, yes, what they got to do with saving souls and running charity hospitals. I can tell, Phil, you're new to this topic, and you got a steep learning curve to get up to speed with the rest of us here.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I'll get the DVD. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, sir. And, you know, keeping it, I sometimes refer to talk radio as a classroom with a revolving door at the back of it. We always have new students showing up, don't we?
Well, I try to be clear, and if I'm not, you be sure to slow me down.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling you, I want to make this point before we get off the length of the day.
Right.
And this has been, the length of the day goes, well, it's like a sinusoidal curve.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's been fairly regular. I mean, it's been a regular curve with irregular perturbations. Let's
right.
put it that way.
Right.
After it was about before the 8.8 in Chile,
mm-hmm.
Sometime at the end of last year, it changed, and it's no longer it's too early to say what it's going to do.
Right.
Give us
the possible extremes of what it could do, if you would. If
well,
you can.
The possible extremes is that instead of being periodic.
Mm-hmm.
It could just drop off,
okay,
and not be periodic anymore. It could still remain periodic, but not be as regularly periodic.
Okay. Well, and please, if you would, if somebody is a forklift driver or a stay-at-home mom, so what? What does it mean to them?
Well, the Earth's spin keeps us in orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And if something...
That's pretty important.
That seems pretty important to me, yes. And if the length of... There's one problem is that the people that keep track of whether we're going to add a leap second or not,
mm-hmm.
at the NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology,
mm-hmm.
I've talked to their senior scientists, and they have no way of taking out... a leap second. In other words,
okay.
they can add a leap second, but their technique does not involve taking one out because they never thought that the Earth would speed up.
Right, right.
So if the curve drops below zero, in other words, if it's no longer stable and it's at zero, I mean, if it's no longer a constant, I don't want to say stable, but if it's
right.
no longer constant, but it actually speeds up to the point where they should, in order to keep the time network
uh-huh.
correct
uh-huh.
and timing is involved in ATT communications, telephone
say,
communications,
yes. yeah,
shipping. I mean,
it.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean, we live in a very complex economic world. And
well,
timing,
let me simplify this. I agree with what you're saying, and let me help you out here if I can.
Yes, please.
This is for all you Joe Sixpacks and Jane Sixpacks out there. All us. I refer to myself as a barefoot peasant. All us barefoot peasants out here in the flyover country. And what this means is our world, everything we count on in the modern world, which is the power grid, telecommunications, the things that make our modern world work, whether you're a forklift driver or a stay-at-home mom or a Fortune 500 CEO, is dependent upon everything working properly connected to these electronic or atomic clocks that they have set up, and if they cease to function properly, things start to break down. Would that be an accurate assessment, Ann?
That is accurate, John.
Okay.
And that could happen,
okay.
and that would be disastrous for the world economy.
Absolutely.
And it would mean ships running aground. It would mean telephone communications not working. It would mean that...
Well, everything's gone digital. 50 years ago, telecommunications was had almost no SIM... Well, there were no semiconductors because they didn't exist. It was hardwire copper with vacuum tubes and human beings and mechanical switches making things work. That's all gone. That's all in museums.
I wanted to ask you and your listeners to go up on my website and look at the chart and then come back with questions, because I'm concerned. And if they have any ideas about its significance, I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's very significant what mm-hmm. what I'm seeing. Now, if you go up to the website, it's called the EOP, and if you just Google EOP, you'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run out of France, I believe.
Okay.
But they're very good about posting the data, except that... Last fall, they changed the format of the data, but that's okay. It's still all there, and
okay.
I've printed it. I mean, I've assimilated it into my previous data set, and it's okay. It's consistent.
Okay.
It's just they changed the units and they changed the format, but it's
mm-hmm.
consistent. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not too worried about that there was any chicanery involved.
Okay.
Because I look at it from 1962 when they started. Which I believe was the geophysical year,
okay.
as I remember.
48 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And, but anyway, the time of day is, the Earth is spinning faster,
mm-hmm.
and it also seems to be spinning faster.
Mm-hmm. So it's speeding up. It's
speeding
not just
up.
Going faster, it continues to go faster.
Yes.
And how does that translate into the length of day?
Well, the length of day shortens.
Okay.
And we have no way of fixing that. But
mm-hmm.
but it triggers earthquakes.
Aha. Uh-huh.
What do earthquakes do? They move magma out from the center of the Earth
mm-hmm.
to the outside of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do? That slows, remember, if you put your arm out, you're
right.
going to spin slower.
Right. So there should be a slowing effect from that.
There should be a slowing effect. That is one of nature's ways
of self-correcting.
Correcting.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect that we will see earthquakes and volcanoes, especially volcanoes. Now, we're already seeing this volcano up in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And the Iceland is at the top of the Atlantic Ridge. And the Atlantic Ridge... is the tectonic plate boundary between the North American plate and the Eurasian plate.
Now, this volcano in Iceland is very near another volcano in Iceland
that
looked at as a triggering effect?
Yes, we've been watching it now. Well,
okay, man, we got a break. Hold on.
Okay.
We'll be back with our guests after the break. Everybody stay tuned.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ann, are you still there?
Yes, I am, John.
Okay, let's get your website out again because we're going to run out of time very quickly, please.
Yeah, worldwideweb.homeland-defense4u.com.
All right, and there's a link for my website, thelibertyman.com. Okay, we're going to wrap this up with something very serious. It's going to be a warning for all our listeners concerning something that's happened in the past, which... A triggering event is in the process of taking place right now. Please go ahead.
Yes, I'm sure that your listeners have seen the news clips of that volcano, fire and ice is what it's being called. There's a volcano in Iceland right in the between two glaciers, and it's spectacular. It's throwing lava up hundreds of feet in the air, and then the lava comes down, and it runs down a trench and goes into the sea, and, of course, the lava fall is spectacular also,
right.
And tourists are going over there to see that.
Sure.
When this happened 200 years ago or so, it triggered an associated volcano that's to the southwest of this one, about 20 miles away.
Right.
And when that happened, that other volcano is under a glacier on Iceland.
Right.
And when it exploded, it vented. It not only threw up the water vapor from the ice, mm-hmm. it not only broke up the glacier, but it vented very poisonous gases.
Right.
And I'm talking hydrogen sulfide.
And that went southeast into the United Kingdom and
carbon dioxide. Well, on Iceland itself, it wiped out half the population and half the produce, the cattle and stuff.
Right.
The winds blew it, and depending on which way the winds blow, of course, but the winds blew it into Britain, and it killed a bunch of people there. I don't know, a quarter of the population or so. Now, this is 200 years ago.
Right.
And did considerable damage to the livestock.
And the Northern Hemisphere went for 2 years with no summer?
Yes, it became a volcanic winter for 2 years.
And what did that do to crop production for 2 years?
Well, there was no crop production, and many people died of starvation.
Right, right. And, of course, the population then was dramatically less than it is now. This is your warning, ladies and gentlemen. This is real. We're not making it up. It's based on scientific record, and 200 years ago, in terms of written records and calendars, is just yesterday. People wrote down very accurately what happened, documented it, and it's not being talked about by the powers that be, as an ant.
No, and the other thing you have to consider, John, is that there's been a pattern of a high pressure sitting over Greenland,
mm-hmm.
and Iceland is to the south east of Greenland,
right.
And an atmospheric high, will bring the winds south of Greenland. So it could pick up those poisonous gases and bring them into southern Canada, northern United States.
Oh, boy.
So we are not out of the woods just because we're on this side.
Well,
you need to keep track
of
where the highs and the lows are in the atmosphere.
Right, right. Well, you and I will continue to put warnings out as we you know, you and I are in basically daily contact by email, Ann, and I appreciate your updates.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stay on top of this, even though the federal government won't warn you. Ann Morrison and John Moore will warn you to the best of our ability.
Well, the civil authorities should be alerting the people now. This is a very, very, very dangerous situation.
It's not good for business. It's not going to happen.
John.
Well, I mean, that's serious.
Well, thank you for all the good work you do.
Okay, Ann, thank you very much. We're just about out of time here, and we'll have you back on again soon.
All right. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to the top of the hour here. And that's our music. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. Call number is 800-313-9443. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. Welcome back to the John Moore Show. Well, the last hour, if you were listening, you heard my guest, Ann Morrison. We were talking about these earthquakes and the dangers presented to the planet, especially the northern hemisphere. We have basically two climate systems on the planet, one north of the equator, one south of the equator. And we certainly are at great risk, and we will keep you updated to the best of our ability. We do have a call on hold here, and we got Leo in Massachusetts. Go ahead, Leo.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
Could you give out her website again, because I didn't catch it earlier.
Yeah, there's a link. The easy thing to do, Leo, is just go to my website, thelibertyman.com, and then there's a link to Ann Morrison's website, Homeland Defense for You.
Homeland Defense what?
Homeland Defense for You.
Oh, okay.
And there's a link to my website, The Liberty Man, on my links page.
So I'm kind of glad that you're sort of seemingly coming back down to Earth. I really couldn't quite comprehend the whole Planet X thing. That seems to be so out there.
It's when you first hear about it, you your immediate thought and reaction is what mine was. Yeah, sure, you need a tinfoil hat really bad, right?
Well, not just that. It's just like, what constellation are you from?
Yeah, I know.
But this seems to be more down to earth. I always wonder about the whole ramifications of all the gas and oil that we're exploiting. Now, theoretically, you know, the Earth is covered by, 78% water, right?
That's about right, yep.
And if we take out the gaseous supporting inside the planet and don't replace it.
Leo, hold on. We got a break. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. Leo, are you still there, sir?
Yeah, right.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was basically going on the line of thinking that if we're going to deplete all this oil and gas from inside, and if they're not replacing it with some sort of buffer, wouldn't that basically shrink the size of the mantle? The
part where I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that in my neighborhood, the Midwest here, there are towns in southern Illinois that are being abandoned because coal mining operations are having the ground collapse underneath the towns.
And there's no recourse with suing the company?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. It's pretty, you know, when you're in high school and your little town starts sinking, that kind of gets your attention. And
are there any stories of this URLs I can find?
I would put some keywords into a Google search and you could probably find them. But, yeah, this stuff's happening. And the questions you're asking are really beyond my expertise, Leo, but they're certainly good questions.
I'm just interested in another. Could you go into the Siberian comet hit from the 1800s, I think it was?
It was in the, late 1880s, early 1990s, something like that.
Tunguska or something like that?
Yes, sir. Well, it did happen, and it's a scientific historical fact, and it's been about 110 years ago, and it had the impact of a nuclear device going off and wiped out tens of thousands of acres of trees and probably whatever reindeer were walking around there at the time. Yeah, it was quite an event.
I mean, that's the type of thing that is a good probability if we suck in the wrong rock.
One of the things about the 10th planet, Leo, is a debris field that travels with it about a quarter million miles wide on either side.
And when is that supposed to get here?
It's affecting us now. Don't be looking for a date. If there is a date, none of us researchers outside the government have a date. It's a time frame, and we're in the time frame right now. That's why these changes are happening, is the effects of gravity and electricity on our planet and on the sun.
So maybe they're looking at this whole argon laser thing of shooting at it as it's coming in and breaking up into smaller pieces.
Well, it may be powerful enough to do that if it's small enough. It's once again, I don't know how powerful these devices are. And short of getting Bruce Willis to go up there and blow it up in person, I guess that's all they're left with, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the scientists aren't about to expose how much they really know.
No, it's a matter of national security because there's dual use here. These devices have military uses as well as saving the planet. They're not about to tell what their capabilities are.
I mean, they've even put them in C-130s, I think.
Mm-hmm. I doubt anything that would fit in a C-130 would be capable of knocking out an asteroid.
Oh, right. But, I mean, the similar devices.
Yes, sir. Just a smaller version. Is that it for today, Leo?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Before I forget, if you want the highest quality freeze-dried food at the best price, shipping included, Freeze Dry Guy is the man you want to call. He does free consultations. He's out there on the left coast. You can call him Monday through Friday during normal business hours Pacific time at 866-404-3663, 866-404-3663. His website is freezedryguy.com, and, of course, there's a link from my website, thelibertyman.com. Be sure and inquire about two things. Actually three. One would be his buyer's club, $5 a month, gives you an across-the-board discount on everything. Is four, pay-as-you-go clubs, which will put you on a regular schedule of getting food delivered to your door, and inquire about what his monthly special is. Some months he has a monthly special, some months he does not. So be sure and ask about those things. In addition, as far as preparedness and having electricity at your home, farm, or ranch that you own and you control, you need to talk to Rick Salata about the Edison batteries. the missing link of making your own electricity. They are nickel iron alkaline batteries as opposed to lead acid. It's a 100-year-old technology that makes batteries that don't wear out. And you can find out about that at Rick's website, dedicated website, ZapWorks, World Wide Web, ZapWorks, Z-A-P-P-W-O-R-K-S. His phone number up in Dillon, Montana on Mountain Time. You can call Monday through Friday during Mountain Time business hours. It's 406-834-3611. I say again, 406-834-3611. And, of course, my website is thelibertyman.com. My best-selling DVD is right there, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. I have a toll-free auto line, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Very nice young men and women, family-run business. 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. And, of course, my website is thelibertyman.com. We got callers stacking up here like airplanes at LaGuardia. And let's go right to Wayne in Missouri. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, for your previous caller, the year was 1908 for the Siberian event.
There we go, 102 years ago. Thank you.
And I had a question about, I read a book where the Tambora volcano eruption in 1815, 1816 caused the summer without, the year without a summer.
Year with no summer, yes, sir.
Is that the same event that your previous guest was talking about?
No, that was a different volcano. This one is in Iceland.
Well, no, I understand that, but was it the same event that caused the same drought?
Same type of event. Yes, sir.
Well, different years though.
Different years, right?
Okay. As she mentioned, 200 year spacing as of 200 years ago. Was that related to the New Madrid earthquake at any?
Not to my knowledge. It's slightly more than 200 years, I think, in the 1780s.
Okay.
200 years is kind of a ballpark, but it was, I think, around 215, 220 years ago.
Okay, and I've been trying to research the Bible code for the tomorrow's April 12th date.
Right.
And I don't get much response from it. Do you still feel that that's a valid code interpretation?
Well, what the code says is that what will happen tomorrow will shake men from their beds, quote unquote. That's a direct quote from the Bible code. It will shake men from their beds. Keeping in mind that the 12th is only a few hours away in Asia.
Correct.
So I guess we won't have long to wait, will we?
No, okay. Thank you very
much.
Okay,
thank you, Wayne. We appreciate it. And we've got Hugh in Virginia. Go ahead, Hugh.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your wonderful show. I just came across you. I'm calling you from Ashland, Virginia, which bills itself the center of the universe.
Really?
Yes, that's what they... I don't know where that started, but...
It sounds like a great Chamber of Commerce thing to me.
Well, for some reason I was drawn here.
Okay.
I just relocated here in October, and... I'm self-proclaimed here the heartbeat of America,
mm-hmm.
and I'm known as that in the National Museum of Patriotism in Atlanta, Georgia.
Fantastic.
And I have things that I am just doing that I hope through people such as yourself picked up on me, because I have a self-taught expertise in what I term creative utilization of information.
Okay.
And as long as we can keep that internet open and free, we will shake, rattle, and roll America and get it back on track and have it be the beacon for the rest of the world as God intended.
Well, that's a wonderful plan, and I'll do whatever I can to help you achieve that goal here.
I left my information with a gentleman who screened me, and I wanted to try and touch base with Sam Kennedy to get this thing really... cooking.
Okay, well, Hugh, why don't you send... Well, let me give you my email address. You can send me an email.
I don't have email. I'm a disabled senior citizen. I don't have access to email or fax.
Okay.
But if you don't mind, I'll mention a blog so people can see a little bit about me.
Okay, well,
goodbye.
Go ahead.
It's my first name, Hugh, H-U-G-H.
Okay.
The number 777.com, if you use the Google search engine.
Okay.
If you have any problem, then use okay. the creativity777.com.
Okay.
On the blog is a letter from President Obama to me related to the economy,
okay.
which I responded to and heard nothing despite repeated attempts.
Right.
Did not vote for him. I will support him as my president, but he's got to start working with the people. He
well,
can't.
Don't hold your breath, Hugh, for that to happen.
Well, it will when my creative utilization of information gets out there. He'll be forced mm-hmm. because the people will run circles around him, and everything is going to be transparent. That's why I say we got to keep that internet
well,
open.
Sounds like a good plan.
Because I want to let you know too. I won't take up too much more of your time, but. I'm not talking out of my hat. This is all based on bizarre experiences, including a near-death experience after losing
right.
my wife.
Right, right.
Back in the early 80s, I exposed a former federal government bureaucrat for
mm-hmm.
fraud,
mm-hmm.
and he was engaged to the daughter of the Speaker of the House at the time.
Right, right.
And this was a front-page Wall Street Journal article, and when that broke, it marked the beginning of the end of Jim Wright, who eventually resigned from office in shame.
Well,
and in this article, it points out so beautifully, back in 1983, exactly how the special interests and lobbyists corrupt the whole system. Doesn't
okay.
matter whether you're Republican or Democrat.
Hugh, we appreciate your call, and we appreciate your information. We've got a break coming up. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Break coming up. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back. Back, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. I have to keep in mind this is radio. We always have new listeners, and just do a quick update here to refresh people's memory about who I am and why I do this. I've been a researcher all my life. In 1967, U.S. Military Intelligence School trained my brain to be an intelligence analyst. Following my tour of duty in the military, which included a tour in Vietnam and with the U.S. Army Special Forces, I went back to college, got a degree as a legal assistant, which was a further refinement of my research skills. I've been a homicide detective most of my adult life, going back to 1973. Homicide detective, private investigator, doing serious things that have serious consequences, and learning very well the following two skills: locating witnesses and taking statements. That's what I do. I do those two things very, very well. When it comes to the topic of the deception of global warming, I have found the witnesses and I have taken their statements. The witnesses are veterans of the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps. Their statements concern classified briefings that they began attending going back to 1979 about what will really be happening, not the make-believe stories put out by Al Gore and NASA, but the real deal, the classified briefings that... Now, classified information, ladies and gentlemen, means if you tell what you know, you go to jail. And that's serious stuff. You know, this is not men and women playing soldier. This is serious stuff with serious consequences, the information given out, these classified briefings. I've taken it upon myself to find these witnesses. They're all men because there's only men serving the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps, at least for the time being. And they told me, in confidence, what they were told in the classified briefings, including several of these men helping me recreate the Navy map. The Navy's classified map showing North America with new coastlines, East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast, Great Lakes region, and the Mississippi Valley. All that information is on my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. It's in my paper, Feel Safe Anywhere, No Need for Panic. I started to give out the title of my book, which is out of print. So that's the Reader's Digest version. Details at my website, thelibertyman.com. And I do 7 radio shows a week on 3 different networks. Republic Broadcasting Sundays, The Micro Effect Monday through Friday, 7 to 8 a.m. Central. And I co-host a show with Dr. Deagle on on Genesis every Friday afternoon from 4 to 5 Central. I do a lot of radio. I consider myself a watchman on the wall, getting the word out to the best of my ability. My message is not going to be on Fox News. I've been on Fox News several times talking about terrorism, but this message won't be allowed to be on the major networks. That's just not going to happen. So we get it out the best way we can, which is by Patriot Radio and the Internet and so forth. Call number is 800-313-9443, and our next caller here is on hold. Art in Arizona. Go ahead, Art.
Hi, John. How are you doing today?
Yes, sir. Good.
I don't know if you covered this in your first hour or not. I missed it, but here in Arizona, I just wanted to let you know the Second Amendment is alive and well. On Thursday, the legislature sent a bill to the governor allowing concealed carry without a permit. We would be the third state
Whoa.
In the union to allow such a thing.
Whoa. I made an announcement about Arizona exempting Arizona-made firearms from federal oversight, but this part is I didn't know about. That's really good news.
No, on Thursday, the legislature sent it to her office for her signature.
And
also, she strengthened the preemption laws, firearm laws.
Right. I knew that part, but I didn't know about the concealed carry part.
Yeah, there was a Mojave County was requiring people that had firearms they were taking the serial numbers of the firearms if you showed up at the courthouse.
Oh, really?
And I guess that's what brought that up to strengthen the preemption laws. So the Second Amendment is alive and well in Arizona.
That is really, really good news, Art. And Arizona's been known to be a very pro-gun state for decades, and this just reinforces that.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. I didn't know if you heard or not.
I didn't know it,
yeah,
and I really appreciate you doing so, Art. Yeah,
she fantastic. She'll be signing it this week. Okay, well, great show as usual,
okay.
And that's all I had for you.
Thank you, Art. We appreciate your call. Thank you, sir. And we got a regular caller here, my friend, a fellow researcher, Sheldon in Arizona. Go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, John.
Yes, sir.
I got to interview John DiNardo myself last night on my own radio show. It was a pleasure, and he'll probably be back again next week.
He makes a great guest, doesn't he?
He sure does.
Yep, very soft-spoken, and he knows his stuff.
Yeah, and I also want to tell your audience that Professor Jim McCanny will be on Dave Hodges' show on RBN tonight talking about the quakes.
Fantastic.
And as far as an update goes with that FOIA request with NASA, I know you know about it already, but just to let your audience know, as of the middle of last week, I was told that it was undergoing a legal review, but the request would be put out to me quite soon. So,
all right. You want to hold on to the break, Sheldon?
That'll be it. Hey, have a good day, John.
Okay, thank you, Sheldon. Break coming up. We'll get back to the calls right after the break. Stay tuned.
Open the door.
It's time for us to face the truth with John Moore. Now, if you want to talk to John live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010, and we've got on hold here Mike in Tucson. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling from Arizona, where water is everything, and
Absolutely.
A lot of people get their water from wells. My question is this. Do you know if there's been any studies done on well survivability after earthquakes?
Well, it's not so much studies as much as what we know happens, and wells can go dry. There can be a disruption in the shaft going down, especially if it's really, really deep. The deeper it is, of course, the more vulnerable it would be. In my neighborhood, we've got something called the New Madrid Seismic Zone. We had caves collapse during the 1811-1812 earthquakes, hundreds of earthquakes. You always need a plan B, Mike. That's the best thing I can say. You always need a plan B. There's no guarantees. Did you feel the earthquake in Mexico?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And you were how far from the epicenter?
About 250, 300 miles.
Now, the part of the world you're in, usually, you, if you're 50 miles from an earthquake, you're not even going to hear it. I mean, feel it, excuse me. And that's highly unusual. That tells you how strong that earthquake was. So my advice, Mike, is to have a plan B for potable water.
All okay. right. Thank you, John.
Okay, you're welcome. And I think this may be my first call in the 5 years I've been on Republic from the United Kingdom. Go ahead, John. What is it, 10:30, 11:30 at night there?
Hello, PJ here in the UK. John Moore, how are you?
Yes,
I did talk to you once before. Thank you very much for your program. It's 10:30. That's where people like me stay up till the early hours.
Okay.
Just briefly, could I ask you about all your knowledge about earthquakes and solar activity, etc.? Can you speak on anything on the Gulf Stream? Because this year we had the worst winter in 40 years, and I noticed the southwesterly winds, which the climate here, are getting colder in the summer.
Okay.
Do you have any information on that, please?
Well, let me give you and give everybody an update on the Gulf Stream here. First of all, have you read my paper, No Need for Panic, John?
No, I haven't actually,
okay.
But I've taken notes on your I take copious notes. I'm going to your website again tonight.
Okay, well, that would be very helpful. But if you look at a map of the world or a globe, you'll see that where you live, John, is just as close to the North Pole as Moscow is. Are you aware of that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're on the same latitude as Edmonton, Alberta.
Right. Despite being that far north, which is very far north, you've always had very mild winters where a nice heavy wool sweater and a little bit of heat would get you through the winter, wouldn't it?
Correct, absolutely
okay.
correct.
And that may be over. We don't know. Hopefully this winter was a fluke and the Gulf Stream hasn't shut down that much. The Gulf Stream brings warm water up from the Caribbean. It swings east and warms up the United Kingdom. The engine that drives it is the salt content, the salinity of the ocean. That's being reduced. Now, public released information from these agencies has pretty much dried up. It was, I believe, December 2004. It was publicly announced that the Gulf Stream had lost half of its mass and velocity. And there was a lot of speculation as to when it would stop and agreement that it would stop. And when it does, your winters go to the kind of winters they have in Alberta, Canada, and in Moscow, as opposed to the very mild winters you've enjoyed for so many centuries.
Yes.
The salinity is being changed by melting fresh water in Greenland and melting fresh water in the Antarctic. The melting water in the North Pole is floating sea ice, so it doesn't change the salinity at all. Although it is melting, it really doesn't change the salinity of the ocean. You may not be aware of this, John, but the United Kingdom, the British government, has been moving critical infrastructure, critical government offices inland to the higher parts of the UK. They don't have.
Oh, that's right, Jim.
Yeah, you are aware of that. Okay.
They've been doing that for several years.
And they're doing it because they have no choice. They have to do it because these low-lying areas of the UK are going to be underwater in the not-too-distant future.
I see. Very good.
So,
that's very comprehensive.
Well, it is. And that, you've got your heads up. You need to get my paper, No Need for Panic. I'll be glad to ship you a copy or email it to you. Send me an email, John, and I'll email you a copy.
Yeah.
Let me give you my email address.
PJ is my name, but
PJ, wrote down, John.
No, I'll come back to you privately, John, and hopefully that can be sold as quality information for you in the UK. I'll give you some sources on that, because there's a poverty of information on this subject.
Absolutely.
But thank you.
Okay, thank you, PJ, for your call. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
All right. And that was PJ in England, in merry old England. The call-in number is 800-313-9443. Ladies and gentlemen, I get emails from and orders for my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, from all over the English-speaking world. The United Kingdom, England, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, a lot of orders from Canada. Basically the English-speaking world. I sent one to American Samoa a few months back, and it took me a few minutes to convince my postmaster at my little post office that American Samoa was part of the United States and even had a zip code. That was kind of fun. He got a bit of an education there. This is real, and it's in our face. I encourage you to become a student of Professor McCanney, as I have. Professor James McCanney is a credentialed scientist. I'm just a homicide detective. I investigate murders. I mean, I'm very good at that. I'm no scientist. I'm a researcher. I am well-trained and very good at doing research, but I'm not a scientist. Professor McCanney, there's a link from my website to Jim McCanney's website. He has a weekly radio show with a huge outreach. It's basically a college-level lecture in layman's terms every week. And he talks about different topics. He has a science topic. It's a one-hour lecture every year. He usually spends at least 15 to 20 minutes on his science topic of the week. You need to get his books. I don't sell his books. He sells his books. He sells books related to the 10th planet. He sells books related to climate and how our climate comes about. Don't get too caught up in this stuff regarding HAARP. Yes, HAARP, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project, it can change and manipulate weather in a few hundred square miles for maybe up to 2 to 3 days. That's what it can do. It can affect, it cannot affect all weather all the time in the entire planet. No, it can't do that. Can humans make earthquakes? Yes, humans can make earthquakes. Do they? Well, how do we know? There's no short of having access to the agencies that have that capability. There's no way to know that. We got a call coming in here. Mitzi from Tennessee. Go ahead, Mitzi.
Until you just, well, not for a very long time, but this really isn't about the planet change things. It was a call in on, I don't know if it was on Joyce Riley. Do you know who she is?
I know Joyce. She's my neighbor. She lives about a one-hour drive from me.
Oh, okay, cool. There was a lady from Israel called and said that Egypt and the United States were had dug a, I don't know, a sewage thing out in the Sinai, and now they were having mosquitoes.
Okay.
In the desert, and she thought it was a conspiracy because they put a, I don't know why they would do that. I don't know if that's got anything to do with anything, depopulation of the earth, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was just wanting to know if you had heard anything about that.
I haven't heard. What did they dig? Some kind of canal or something? Or
yeah, she said they dug a canal, a big, and that they were putting sewage, I guess, in that, and it's out in the desert, and now they've got all these mosquitoes.
Well, mosquitoes do cause a tremendous amount of fatalities worldwide. It's kind of amazing the things that kill the most millions of people, Mitzi, on this planet are the simple things like dirty water and mosquitoes. Things like that is what kills the majority of people that die every year on this planet.
Well, I didn't know exactly all that.
Okay.
I'm just learning all this stuff.
I'll talk to one of my research assistants to see if we can find out something about that, Mitzi.
Okay, and on your map, you have a map, right, on your website?
Right. It's not on my website, no. It's in my paper, No Need for Panic.
No Need for Panic. Well, where do you get that paper?
No Need for Panic.
You can
get it from my website, or you can call my toll-free number. Do you have my toll-free number?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's 800.
Okay.
592-9543. And if you tell the young man or young lady that answers the phone you want a copy of No Need for Panic, they will make sure that happens for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Mindy.
Thank
you for your call. And we've got here Ron in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ron.
How you doing, John? I haven't talked to you for a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir.
There is an unusual phenomenon you guys have mentioned about earthquakes that maybe very, very few people know about. You may know about it, or you may have heard about it. Years ago, there was an earthquake in California called, I think they call it the Hector Mine earthquake.
Okay.
And there was a fellow out there who had a pastime, and he was quite skilled at working with clocks, a lot of pendulum clocks.
Okay.
And some of the clocks he had running stopped, and some of the stopped clocks started running, and some were unaffected.
Okay.
Well, if you keep in mind that the Earth is in a constant state of fluidity, everything moves, has molecular movement, and undulates, but you can't
right.
necessarily feel it.
Right.
Well, the shock wave was felt about 250 miles away where he was living, I believe.
Right.
Well, there's a fella in New Jersey experienced the same identical phenomenon. He was a clock guy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the shock wave, believe it or not, only took to travel from California to New Jersey 16 seconds.
Whoa.
That fast.
That's considerably faster than the speed of sound, yes.
Well, I figured it out. It was some incredible miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if the, say there is an earthquake out there, say there is a 7 or an 8, or the biggie,
right.
You may or may not feel it in certain areas because there's a lot of baffling and seismic considerations to consider
right.
between out there and here.
Right.
But I can guarantee that wave is going to go everywhere, even to the water.
Right. Right.
Now, whether it will affect things dramatically here in Pennsylvania or wherever is, remains to be seen. Now, I'm about 1,000 feet above sea level. I'm about 65 miles east of Pittsburgh, so maybe
okay.
I'm pretty safe as far as the water rising.
Right.
I just thought I'd pass that along to you. It's an interesting little tidbit.
It is. And learning about these things is fascinating because there seems to be just so much to learn. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. I worked with engineers in the past, and when you get to know those guys and talk with them for a while, there's a lot of strange, unusual phenomena that goes on that even they don't have the physical knowledge and the basis behind it, but they're studying things. Every day, study something.
Absolutely.
But it's really weird, you know.
It is.
So I just thought I'd pass that
okay,
little
Okay, well, thank
on.
You, Ron. We appreciate that.
Hey, take care, guys.
Okay, thank you, sir.
See you later.
And the call number is 800-313-9443. Professor McKinney and myself are in agreement that December 21st, 2012 is a matter of disinformation. The websites promoting that particular date is something to be concerned about. You take one look at them, you think, oh my goodness, these look like websites put together by a Fortune 500 company. You look at Professor McKinney's website, you look at mine, I'm doing the best I can with my webmaster and the resources I've got. I think Jim McKinney does his own, and it's obvious, you know, it's something he does on his own. We're doing the best we can. Our websites are obviously not Fortune 500 websites. The websites put out and promoting the 2012 date are clearly and obviously put together by people with serious financial resources. These kind of websites cost a lot of money to put together. You think you're going to watch network television with Jesse Ventura and learn secrets? You think that's going to be allowed? Hardly. Hardly. Not at that level. Talk radio is one of the major uncontrolled areas of media. That's what it is. One of the last uncontrolled areas of media where you can get unfiltered, uncensored information. When I was talking to John Stadtmiller in the fall of 2004 about having a show here on Republic, he says, John, it's an open forum. I do not censor what my hosts talk about. Those are the words I wanted to hear because the station I started out with in 1995, they did censor me. I was giving an accurate, very accurate rendition of the voting record of United States Representative Jim Talent. The only thing the man feared was his own voting record. He became a United States Senator later in his career. He also contributed and bought advertising to the radio station that I was working for at the time. The radio station demanded that I cease and desist from giving out the voting record of their advertiser. The only thing the man feared was his own voting record. I refused to do so, and they fired me. And that's okay. I can live with that. Republic Broadcasting does not censor the host. I can say anything I want on this radio station, and my callers can ask any question they want to ask on this radio station, on this network. That's important. That's free speech. That's real free speech. What you get on major networks, I think Jesse Ventura is a great guy, by the way, and I like him. I like his style, and I regard Jesse as one of the good guys on one hand. On the other, of course, there's censorship involved in any network programming. Of course there is. That's a given. If you think there's not censorship on network radio and network television, wake up and smell the coffee, because that's reality. That's it for today. I think that's it for today. Maybe we got a short break and we'll be back. Thank you very much and stay tuned. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 11th day of April, 2010. Well, we're close to the end of this show for this week. I'll be on the Micro Effect Monday through Friday, 7 to 8 a.m. Central. Like I say, I'll be with co-hosting Bill Deagle's show with him every Friday from 4 to 5 Central. If you want true freedom, and the ability to listen to uncensored information, Republic Broadcasting is where you want to be. It really is. A great lineup of hosts, a good selection of products to help you get prepared, wonderful sponsors like Freeze Dry Guy, for example, that can help you achieve your goals of being independent with your food, independent with potable water. These are serious matters. And I know firsthand. I am a combat veteran of Vietnam. I lived through the Tet Offensive 1968. It's no secret to me what it's like to be hungry, to not have food, and have armed men who want to hurt you between where you are and where the food is. I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt. My job, I consider my job to give you fair warning, so that you can make the preparations you need to make while you can. I don't know how much time we have, quite frankly. I hope we have a year or two. That's quite optimistic. Professor McCanny and I are in agreement that by December 21st, 2012, the major events of these earth changes will either be already finished or so far underway it won't matter. We're in agreement on that. And I hope you can come to understand that and appreciate that, and pay heed and do what you need to do to protect yourself and your loved ones while you can. Now, so we all have different financial resources and different capabilities. Do what you can. Do not despair. Whatever your capabilities are, act on them and take them into account. Do what you need to do to prepare yourself and prepare a safe haven and get ready to be on your own. So that's where we're headed. Being on your own for providing your food, providing your shelter, providing your potable water, medical care, defense, communications, all the rest of it. Very serious matters with very serious consequences. So pay heed, do what you need to do, begin making your preparations, keeping in mind that the single most important thing is spiritual preparation. Above and beyond everything else is your spiritual preparation. It's not my job as a radio talk show host to tell you what that should be. It is my job to advise you that you need to take care of that to your own satisfaction. And keep that in mind. We know from the observing people in hard times, whether POW camps or whatever it might be, that the people who had a very solid spiritual preparedness mindset were the ones who survived, as opposed to the ones who did not. So, another thing to keep in mind is, well, we are out of time. So, we'll see you next week. You all be safe out there. Buy lots of ammunition, and God bless America.